Welcome to our audio recording with Dr. Marty Klein on the topic of surrogate partner therapy. I'm your host, Dr. Ofer Zur, the director of the Zur Institute, LLC. This audio program is part of the Zur Institute educational program. Here at the Zur Institute, we offer over a wide range of free educational material on issues such as ethics, critical thinking, clinical practice, effective therapy, additional focus on boundaries, and much, much more. We also offer over 150 online continuing education courses for psychologists, counselors, and other mental health practitioners. Our website is at www.zurinstitute.com. Today, I have the honor to discuss the topic of surrogate partner therapy with Dr. Marty Klein. Can I call you Marty?
Please do.
Okay, thank you. Marty has been licensed marriage and family therapist and certified sex therapist for 32 years. 32 years. That's a long time, Marty.
Yes, it is.
That's almost... And Marty report of almost 35,000 sessions with men, women, couples discussing desire, orgasm, fantasies, and pleasure, as well as guilt, shame, pain, and anxiety. Marty discussed with in his seminars and with his clients things that so many therapists would not touch with a 10-foot pole or with 50-foot pole. Dr. Klein has written seven books. His sixth book, America's War on Sex, which is my favorite, was honored as a book of the year by the American Association for Sexuality Educators, Counselors, and Therapists, who also known as AASECT. His new book, Sexual Intelligence, What We Really Want from Sex and How to Get It, available in 10 languages. Psychology Today says, read this book if you want to improve your sex life. Can you give us quickly a sense? What is some of the languages that translated your latest book?
Sexual intelligence is translated into Polish, Japanese, French, Spanish, Italian, Portuguese, Czech, and one or two others.
Whoa. Okay. Fantastic.
Thanks.
Marty has also published seven sets of training available on his website. His website is at www.martyklein.com. You spell Marty Klein, MartyKlein.com. He has trained professionals in sexuality across America and in 25 countries on six continents. So the only one you're missing is the penguins in Antarctica?
That's correct.
Okay. Do they have sex life?
Of course.
Okay. You know, there's a mythology that the penguins are monogamous. They are not. They are just serial monogamies.
Like people.
Yeah, like people. Exactly. For 12 years, Marty has published the award-winning electronic newsletter and now blog Sexual Intelligence. Please check it on his website. Marty also authored a couple of online continuing education courses for us at the Zur Institute on the topics of sexual issues, diagnosis and treatment for 5 continuing education credit and couples therapy, counterintuitive approaches to working more effectively for 4 continuing education credit. So here we are, Marty, and the reason kind of that you and I have started talking about the surrogate partner therapy is the movie, The Sessions. This is a 2012 movie that is based on an essay by Mark O'Brien, a poet paralyzed from the neck down due to polio at young age, who in his 40s hired a sex surrogate to have his first sexual experience. Helen Hunt plays the role of the sensitive, intelligent, trained sexual surrogate, and John Hawkes plays the role of the physically disabled, talented, educated poet. The movie has rekindled the interest in the controversial topic of surrogate partner therapy, or what also has been called, rightly or wrongly, we'll discuss it, sexual surrogate therapy. The original concept was developed and studied by Masters and Johnson in their work in human sexual inadequacy in the 1970s. as many issues related to sex, and Marty, you know so much about it, this is a highly controversial issue. While sexual surrogacy was popular practice in the 70s and the 80s, especially in the West Coast, I think, and some in the East Coast, but not so in the rest of the country, I'm not sure about, the idea of psychotherapists, marriage and family therapists, social workers, counselors, and other mental health professionals referring clients to surrogate partner therapy and working with the surrogates is highly controversial and, in fact, very little examined in the last 30 years. So we are kind of here to try to shed some light on what has been dormant for the last 30 years. So a good place to start, Marty, is define to us what is surrogate partner therapy.
Thank you, Ofer. It's a pleasure to be here. What is surrogate partner therapy? Surrogate partner therapy involves three people. It involves the therapist, the surrogate partner, and the patient. And surrogate partner therapy involves conventional therapy with the therapist, plus the patient and the surrogate are having a series of experiences together, mostly social kinds of experiences.
Marty, you can talk a little bit. You can talk a little
lunch, things like that.
Marty, you can talk a little bit away from the mic, a little bit more away. You're a little bit
away from the mic.
Away from the mic a little bit. Go ahead. Sorry.
Okay, I'm too much, huh?
Yeah, that's. I've heard about.
Well,
it
let
before.
Me start again, okay?
No, you're
what
okay.
What is
no,
surrogate partner therapy?
We heard you,
surrogate
actually.
Surrogate therapy is a process that involves three people. It involves the therapist, the surrogate partner, and the patient. The patient sees the therapist every week or two, as in conventional therapy. The patient also sees the surrogate every week or two, and they have various kinds of psychosocial experiences. Sitting and talking together, maybe going to lunch, maybe the patient will brush the surrogate's hair, and it may involve more overtly sexual activities as the therapy unfolds. And then finally, the other important part of surrogate partner therapy is the ongoing telephone contact between the therapist and the surrogate partner. Without all three of those elements, it's not surrogate partner therapy, it's something else.
You describe a wide range of activities on the part of the sexual partner therapist that really are not even necessarily directed to sex. So a good place to expand on that a little bit is people used to call it sex surrogate, and the connotation of surrogate partner therapy often goes to sex surrogates and to sexual activities. So help us differentiate between the two, and I'll throw into the mix, how is it different? People want to know the surrogate partner therapy from prostitution. So I'm kind of ask you to differentiate here between sexual partner therapy and just sheer sexual activities.
Well, if an adult is a competent member of society, if an adult is psychologically developed appropriately, there's a lot of things that are necessary for sexual activity that we take for granted. I mean, you have to be able to look at somebody. You have to be able to tolerate being touched. You have to be able to tolerate that your partner has one hair out of place. You have to be able to tolerate that your partner is wearing a blue dress instead of a green dress. All of these things that the typical adult takes for granted, if a person is not adequately developed psychosocially, these things are big obstacles. So what surrogate partner therapy does is it addresses the psychosocial deficits or the intrapsychic deficits that a person has that are getting in the way of them relaxing enough to be able to have a relationship with somebody. And if that sounds like conventional psychotherapy, in some ways it is. But what the surrogate partner does, in consultation with the therapist, the surrogate partner designs a series of activities or exercises for the patient so that the patient can can experience anxiety in a controlled environment and then experience their own internal resources and their own ability to overcome that anxiety.
So to be like desensitizing, to be like a form of desensitizing?
Yeah, yeah. And so gradually the patient becomes less anxious about things like looking at a woman, things like suggesting, do you want to hold hands with your right hand or with your left hand? Again, things that most adults take for granted. So when the surrogate is doing these activities with the patient, the goal is fully as clinical as when a therapist does an activity with a patient. So if I have a patient who's a big sports fan and they want to talk about the latest for the 49ers winning the other night, so we might do that. We might have a conversation about that. That might last a long time if in my clinical judgment, this is a valuable thing for us to be doing. If it's not, in my judgment, a valuable thing for us to be doing, no matter how much fun I might have talking about the 49ers, we're not going to do that. That's a standard clinical understanding. Well, with the surrogate, it's the exact same thing. The surrogate is not there with the patient to have fun for herself. And similarly, the surrogate is not there to provide simple gratification for the patient. The goal is not for the patient to have fun. The goal is for the patient to grow, to experience and overcome anxiety, to get insight into their own process. So that's very different from prostitution, right? Prostitution is designed specifically to provide certain kinds of gratification to the patient, whether it's physical or emotional or a combination of the two. There's no expectation that the patient is going to grow from an activity with a prostitute. There's no expectation that a customer of a prostitute is going to experience insight or anything like that. With the surrogate partner, on the other hand, that is the expectation. And if that's not happening, then the surrogate, in consultation with the therapist, will change the activities that that the surrogate is doing with the patient.
And the movie also, we'll talk about it about the movie in a minute, but the movie also differentiates it, say that prostitution, the goal is to have many more interactions and money exchange between the client and the prostitute. In contrast, the surrogate partner therapy is time limited. Do you get a sense about the time limitedness of that? Because once the goals are achieved, the surrogate partner therapy is terminated. And do you have any sense of pricing? People kind of wonder about pricing. And I may need to ask the IPSA people about it, but give me a sense about the time limit difference between this and prostitution.
Well, you know, some people go to prostitutes once a month for 25 years, and some people go to a prostitute once. As far as surrogate partner therapy goes, it's like with conventional therapy. You know, it all depends on okay. what the patient's difficulty is and how long it takes to resolve that. I would say that it's unusual for a patient to go to a surrogate partner just once or twice. And it's unusual for a patient to go to a surrogate partner for 2 years. So somewhere between two sessions and 2 years, I think, is the average. And I would say that for a lot of cases, about 10 sessions would be just about right.
Okay. That gives us a good sense of that. The film is a Hollywood production and probably will be getting more awards. And I know it need to kind of draw people and focus on sex. And what's your sense about how accurate the film, the sessions, is in regard to what really happened in surrogate partner therapy?
Well, you know, let me start in a funny direction. You've been a therapist forever. I've been a therapist forever. How often do you see therapy in general portrayed in the movies or on television and say to yourself, yeah, that's accurate, that's about right? My experience is practically never.
Is the HBO program on, what is it?
Yeah, that show stands out
exactly
because it has elements of accuracy, and that's so unusual.
Exactly, you're right. I just needed to mention it because I love, what is it, Incession it's called. Oh my goodness, they have the same name.
So it's very unusual for therapy in general to be accurately portrayed. And indeed, that's the same thing with surrogate partner therapy. It's rarely portrayed with much accuracy. That said, there's a lot that's accurate about the movie, but as you explain yourself, the sessions, it's not a documentary. It's a fictionalized version of one man's story. One of the things that's not accurate is that a highly trained and experienced surrogate generally does not have explicitly sexual activity with a patient for many, 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 many sessions. They have to get to know each other. I mean, if a person goes to surrogate partner therapy and they're able to relax and enjoy sexual intercourse,
they don't need, they probably don't.
Just knowing surrogate, you know, for a week or two, then they don't belong in surrogate partner therapy.
Yeah.
Surrogate partner therapy is for people who are really anxious about social and or sexual contact. And so in real life, what a surrogate would typically do, now, you know, every case is different, but in real life, what a surrogate partner would typically do in consultation with the therapist is they would ramp up to sexual activity very, very gradually and very slowly, and they may not even get to sexual activity. It may be that after a number of sessions, the patient has grown so much that they don't need to have sex with the surrogate partner. They can go out into the world and they can create a meaningful sexual experience by themselves.
Interesting. Tell us kind of, you know, just in a few sentences, a little bit sense of the history. You have studied the field of sex therapy in and out, and now this new this old topic kind of raising its head 30 years later. Take us back a little bit to the 70s and give us just very brief history of SPT.
Well, let's see. Masters and Johnson were really world-changing figures. It's hard for us today to appreciate just how radical their work was. Back when Masters and Johnson were doing their work, scientists had mapped out how does the human eye work, how does the human digestive system work, etc. But, you know, nobody in America had systematically studied the physiology of sexuality. And that's what Masters and Johnson did. And they did it in a way that in other arenas of sexuality is a long time honored tradition. They actually measured things. And what they measured is what goes on inside a vagina, what goes on with a penis, what goes on with skin response and so on during sexuality. And Masters and Johnson mapped out what do people's bodies actually go through during the process of sexual arousal and excitement and orgasm. So having done that, they were really interested in a broader perspective on sexuality, and they actually had a clinic where they were helping people overcome sexual difficulties. They developed a number of modalities, one of which was surrogate partner therapy, and they trained people in their center in St. Louis, and then those people fanned out across the country and began to popularize surrogate partner therapy. Therapists began to get interested in this modality, And there was a lot of success with a number of these cases for a number of years.
Are there studies? Another very important question: what do we know about the efficacy? And I know my online paper. Again, you can go to my website www.zurinstitute.com and search for for surrogate partner. And there are some references for efficacy. What do we know about the efficacy studies back in the 70s, 80s?
We don't know that much, Ofer, because in general, there were not a lot of efficacy studies done of various therapeutic modalities back then. Whether it's about Santray therapy, whether it's about group therapy, whether it's about seeing a couple versus seeing an individual. Efficacy studies were not common.
You're right. And, yeah, you're absolutely right.
And so it was anecdotal, and a certain amount of the efficacy then, as now, depends on the relationship. Excuse me, the relationship between the patient and the practitioners. So, but what happened was that as the country became more conservative, both sexually and politically, in the 80s, the popularity of surrogate pornotherapy declined. And
this is part of the more general backlash, what we described at the time, to the women's movement, to the civil rights movement. We have the backlash in the 80s. And part of it was a disappearance of the surrogate partner therapy from the scene, kind of. Did I get it right?
Yeah, and, you know, for people who are very young right now, it's hard to describe the change in the culture in just a short 10 years from 1974 to 1984. Everything changed, you know, the music changed, the styles changed. Ronald Reagan became president, and...
Yeah.
And it was
almost Ronald didn't become president says it all, you know. It's a good summary.
So surrogate pornotherapy, along with some other controversial or unusual modalities, it declined in popularity. It declined in frequency, and it remained that way for a long time. And yet, at the same time, there were still people who did it, still people who were being trained to do it, still people who remembered the heyday of it. And now with the launch of the movie, there's a lot of renewed interest in this modality.
And, you know, this is a good time. You mentioned that there was some sense of continuity. And you and I have discussed the International Professional Surrogate Association, or what is called also IPSA. It's something you have been very familiar. And this is part of what actually part of the continuities back for the last 20, 30 years. Can you tell us about IPSA, what it is, its importance, its code of ethics, its training? It's kind of one organization that holds kind of the integrity of the entire field of surrogate partner therapy. So tell us some about IPSA.
Gladly, Ofer. IPSA, IPSA, International Professional Surrogates Association, very fine organization based in California. They've been training and supervising the field for 30-something years. The president, the founder and president, Dr. Vina Blanchard, excellent clinician in California. IPSA has a code of ethics. They train people. They are sort of the go-to organization when the media wants to do an article about surrogate partner therapy, which they do periodically. They usually in a very sensationalized way, and of course the media are very, very eager to call the practitioner sex surrogates rather than surrogate partner, which is a complete mistake, as you and I have discussed. So IPSA and they have a great website. What is it, sexsurrogate.org, I think?
Yeah.
I have it bookmarked, so I don't know the URL. So when people have questions about what is this and where do I find a surrogate and is it for me and all of that, they have a lot of articles and interviews posted on their website. So you're right, Ofer, that most of the continuity in the field of surrogate partner therapy has been provided by this organization over time, and they have been performing and continue to perform a really valuable service for people.
You know, it's kind of you and I talked, and I've done this research about the legal and ethical background for this issue, and I find nothing. So there's no code of ethics of any organization mentioned surrogate partner therapy. Say it again, Marty.
You mean outside of IPSA, there's no...
Yeah,
mention.
Outside of IPSA, yeah. I'm talking about the licensing boards do not provide any guidelines that I'm aware of. the legal status of referring to a surrogate partner therapy has been debated, and really we don't have a case study. So in this kind of a world where so much is unknown, there was one case in the 80s in Massachusetts that a psychologist supposedly lost their license, and then you cannot find any trace of records of this case. So when I called a few organizations, I didn't get none of the major organizations has a position on surrogate partner therapy. And so IPSA is so important in this regard because IPSA provide the train the people and qualify them to act as surrogates, and also they have a code of ethics, which is very tight, and talk about what you already mentioned, that you need to work very closely with a therapist. So IPSA is important as it can give a legitimacy and professionalism to the people that if we consider to refer to them from us therapists to the surrogate partner therapy. So their code of ethics and is very important. However, there are very few people who have been certified by IPSA. We're not talking about thousands of people across the country being certified by IPSA, which perhaps we wish they would. Am I correct about that part?
Now we wish that IPSA trained more people so there were more surrogates?
Yeah.
Well, In order for these more surrogates to be able to do their job, there would need to be more therapists who are trained in surrogate partner therapy.
Yeah.
So surrogates can't do surrogate partner therapy without therapists, just like therapists can't do surrogate partner therapy without surrogates. So yes, it would be great to have more surrogates trained, and at the same time, we need more therapists trained to work with them.
Yeah. So perhaps let's shift a little bit. What I know that different people have different needs, but what kind of clients may need to be referred to SPT? The movie highlighted the importance of such referral for the disabled. This was kind of the sub-theme of the movie, because he got polio at a young age, he is bedridden in an iron lung, he is allowed to be out of the iron lung only for a few hours a day, he had never had sexual experience. So with a disabled, it seems to be kind of clear with or without the movie. How would you give us a range of clients that are more likely to need SPT? You mentioned some of it earlier on in the interview.
Well, surrogate partner therapy is a great modality for clients who are so anxious or so psychosocially underdeveloped that they have very big challenges in creating social relationships for themselves. So that might be someone with Asperger's symptoms, that might be someone on one end of the autism scale, that might be someone who has had early trauma, PTSD, that might be someone who is overwhelmed by guilt or shame, perhaps because of religion or because of abusive.
Oh, this has put like billions of people into the need of surrogate partner therapy.
I'm sorry?
Those who are overwhelmed by shame and guilt around sexual issues put only a few billion people into the pool here of potential clients who needs it.
But of course, as we know, to be serious about it,
I was serious actually.
Most people who have shame and guilt around their bodies or about sexuality, they manage to fumble their way into a sexual relationship. It may not be particularly satisfying, but they manage to fumble their way into it. At the same time, we know that there are some people who are so incapacitated by shame and guilt that they're not even able to create an unsatisfactory emotional connection with somebody else or an unsatisfactory sexual connection with somebody else. So for those people, surrogate partner therapy can provide a launching pad. It can provide an environment in which they confront their guilt and their shame gradually. They learn more about it. They feel encouraged that there's someone who's willing to go slowly with them through the process of actually developing a relationship. You can imagine for a person like this, sexual intercourse would be way in the distance and might never even occur during surrogate partner therapy. I mean, for a person like this, going to a restaurant and being willing to order lunch that's different than what the surrogate partner orders, for them, that would be a big emotional accomplishment.
Or as we know in our offices, just even holding hands and looking into somebody's eyes.
Yes, yes. For some people, that's an enormous challenge. And so what surrogate partner therapy does is it provides a surrogate, a substitute partner with whom somebody can have some of those activities that most people consider to be very lightweight or very superficial. It provides a person with whom a patient like this can have some of these experiences that are carefully modulated, carefully discussed between therapist and surrogate partner, and the patient can go through these activities, be aware of their anxiety or their guilt or whatever, and actually deal with it little by little by little.
On the other extreme, what will be the kind of patients that will be counterindicative to refer to SPT? Which clients, in your opinion, somebody has to be very cautious or perhaps not even refer to SPT?
Well, I would not think that a person with borderline features would be a good candidate for surrogate partner therapy. You know, that kind of complex attachment bundle, that would be just asking for trouble. Patients who are, you know, at risk of decompensating, you certainly would not want someone like that in surrogate partner therapy. Someone who would have difficulty dealing with the fact that they were seeing a surrogate partner therapy and that they felt so ashamed of that or so guilt-ridden about that they couldn't function in the rest of their lives, like they couldn't do their job because they felt so guilty about seeing a surrogate partner yesterday, that's a person who would not be a good candidate either.
That makes sense. What about transference and counter transference issues, and I use it not necessarily as a psychoanalytic approach to SPT or to clients, but what are the reactions that kind of the complexity of the reaction between therapy surrogates and patient, kind of this triangle, when it comes to issue for transference and counter transference, again beyond the narrow analytic definition of that?
Well, it can happen in a lot of different ways. For example, the therapist might feel envious that the patient feels so much more emotionally attached to the surrogate than they do to the therapist. The therapist might feel, I'm working as hard as the surrogate partner is. Why don't you rave about me the way you rave about the surrogate partner? So that's one example of what might happen.
The whole issue about sexuality too probably fits into why do he get to sleep with her, why she get to sleep with him, because it's kind of right there in the clinical room as the topic of discussion.
Right, and the therapist needs to have a fairly healthy relationship with sexuality themselves, so that they can tolerate discussions of, well, she put her hand here, or, you know, I put my finger there, or, you know, I took a shower with her, and wow, she's so beautiful. And, you know, if the therapist gets uncomfortable with those kinds of conversations, that's going to be trouble. Similarly, if the therapist...
If they are not comfortable with that, I recommend that they go to your website and take your courses or listen to you in person, because you crisscross the world and the country, because you have a way to talk about these issues and make it comfortable to the most constipated people on the planet. And it's incredible that I've seen you with different audiences, and it's a very hard topic. Money and sex, it's the two topics that therapists are really not great at. And you make at least the sex part kind of to talk about in a natural way, in a human way, you put it with such a good flow. And even people who have difficulty with the topics are just kind of melt into your presentation and increase the comfort zone. So thank you for this contribution to our field. I know some people perhaps don't appreciate it as much, but I do.
As you know, my clinical approach to sexuality is therapists need to talk about sex the way they talk about everything else, and patients need to talk about sex the way they talk about everything else. And that one of the ways that a therapist can be helpful is to challenge a patient who's unwilling or unable to talk about sex the way they talk about everything else and say, how come? And that can be the launching point, the launching pad for a lot of really valuable discussions. But if the therapist colludes with the patient's idea that there's this exceptionalism around sexuality, mm-hmm. that sex is not something that should be discussed the way other things are discussed, then the therapist is going to be unable to challenge the patient around that in helpful ways.
And this brings us to, you know, your fantastic work of American War on Sex. You know, I've lived in many countries and many continents, from Africa and Europe and the Middle East and the United States, and have not encountered any culture that kind of polarized pornography and, on one hand, and conservatism and puritanism on the other end. And you have this book, America, War on Sex. It really fits into trying to help therapists and the culture understand our relationship to sex and to make it less polarized and more healthy. And it fits into the whole idea of the surrogate partner therapy.
Thank you. My book, America's War on Sex, it took many years to write, and in that book, I talk about the way that so many institutions in American culture are colluding in keeping sexuality from being a normal part of everyday life. Mm-hmm.
Being pornographic at the same time, being highly pornographic at the same time with the billboards in L.A. and et cetera.
Yeah, you know, America has such a schizophrenic relationship with sexuality. You know,
yes.
The message we give young people is sex is dirty, save it for someone you love. And the message we give adults is that you should be having sex all the time under every single circumstance, but you're not eligible if you don't have a perfect body. You're not eligible if you're not rich and young. And it makes people really nutty. It's as if all the physicians in the world encourage diabetics to go into candy stores every day.
Yeah.
Or we were encouraging all the alcoholics in the world to go into alcohol stores every day.
I mean, it's beyond the topic kind of the day, but then the pornography and the internet, and you have written about that, added a whole new dimension of accessibility of some of the material and the activities that took the field, the area of sexuality worldwide to a different place altogether. We won't take a dive into that. I know you write a lot about these issues too, but they're kind of marginally relevant to the topic.
Yeah, I mean, it's relevant in the following way, that with the introduction of high-speed broadband into everyone's home now, everybody has access to erotic imagery in their own home whenever they want it. And for some patients, for some people, that provides, on the one hand, a lot of push to have sexual experiences, and at the same time, some people know that they're just not able to do that with another person. That's where surrogate partner therapy can be so valuable. I think that people may underestimate the extent to which, for people who don't have a sexual relationship with another person, all that pornography can make them feel bad, can make them feel inadequate, can make them feel left out. And when people feel left out, it's very problematic, and we don't want people to feel left out of the ongoing circus of, you know, human connection. Surrogate pornotherapy for some of those patients can really provide an entree back into social connection in general, not just sexual connection, but social connection in general.
Yeah, that's it's incredible. Side topic about the relationship between the two of erotic images online as well and the surrogate partner therapy. We won't take a dive into that. We are kind of almost at the end of this informative interview. And what kind of, if you can recap, what do therapists, counselors, and perhaps some people of the public who would be listening to this recording, what would they take with them kind of around the surrogate partner therapy issue?
Well, when a therapist refers a patient to surrogate partner therapy, they're not offloading the patient onto the surrogate. When a therapist refers a patient to surrogate partner therapy, they're referring the patient to a process, to the surrogate partner therapy process, which involves, as I said before, three people, not two, but three. So when a patient is involved in surrogate partner therapy, it involves not just the activities that the patient does with the surrogate, it also involves the activities that the patient continues to do with the therapist and the ongoing consultation between therapist and surrogate. So it's a three-person, three-way process. It's not that the therapist is getting rid of the patient. And for anyone who is advertising themselves as a surrogate who does not work with a therapist, they're not doing surrogate partner therapy. They may be doing one of a number of different things, but they're not doing surrogate partner therapy.
Then that's important. I would like just to add what I mentioned earlier. I'm going to continue to follow up on the ethical and the legal issues that involve in that in my article on my website at zurinstitute.com. And one more time, Mari, for people, where they can reach you and get your newsletter and get the CDs and courses, give us the URL of your website one more time?
Sure. It's very simple. It's www.martyklein.com, MartyKlein, martyklein.com. As you said, lots of free stuff for both therapists and the lay public. And you should mention Zur Institute. Is it zurinstitute.com or .org?
.com.
.com. Zurinstitute.com. Phenomenal resource for people. And, of course, the URL for IPSA, which is surrogatetherapy.org, www.surrogatetherapy.org. They're great people over there. They're very smart. And, Ofer, I appreciate you giving me and our audience a chance to look at surrogate partner therapy this way. It's part of a larger project that you and I share, which is to educate both the public and the profession about various clinical modalities, and especially when it comes to sexuality, where we don't get as much training as we do in some other areas, where the mass media provides so much pressure on therapists to do things that are not helpful. It's so important that that therapists who may not have as much training as they need, they get access to information about various modalities. And I appreciate that the Zur Institute has courses and audio recordings that can be really helpful for professionals about that.
Thank you, Marty. It's really, as always, just pleasure to talk to you, to hear you open-minded, to feel your open heart, and thank you so much, and I'm sure we'll be in touch with more interesting topics. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.